This is the new Weight Watchers, built for real life and real results, no matter what mode you're in. Maddie went all in for her big day and lost 33 pounds. Emily lost 85 pounds and hit her goal while still living her life.
Weight Watchers gave me the tools and I feel amazing.
Join the millions of members and lose weight with the number one doctor-recommended weight loss program. Lose more at weightwatchers.com.
At 6 months, participants in a clinical trial of Weight Watchers program lost an average of 12 pounds.
This is the Fixer Sciatica Podcast.
A question that I get presented pretty often is, will my herniated disc or discs heal? This is something I come across when I'm one-to-one of my patient interactions, either in person or virtually. It's also something I often see in the message boards. And the general answer is yes. The human body is amazing. It is designed to heal and recover. And these discs can, in fact, heal. And we have been able to find various different mechanisms as to why these discs heal in the first place. But the big question is to try to figure out, is the disc herniation, sequestration, extrusion, whatever is going on with your disc, is it the actual cause of your pain? And today, we're going to be able to answer the question, will my disc heal? But before we do that, we have to understand, why do discs get injured in the first place? And then from there, we're going to talk a little bit more about how to identify, is your pain actually related to a disc? And then from there, some strategies to actually be able to manage the disc itself, but then also talking about some of the natural healing processes that the body goes through to ensure that healing is possible. And to keep of note, and this is a question and another conversation that I've seen a lot, is, do I need an MRI? And an MRI, I think I talked about MRIs probably about 2 to 3 years ago, and how there's a lot of abnormalities found in asymptomatic or pain-free patients via an MRI. So the big question is whether or not we are able to truly identify the source of pain. Back then, I used to say that if an MRI says you don't have cancer or fracture in your spine, it's done its job. But I think it also serves a peace of mind for people experiencing pain such as yourself. The challenges behind getting an MRI, though, is really mostly the cost. Oftentimes, you're looking at trying to get some sort of pre-authorization or having to pay a huge bill out of pocket. And the good news about MRIs is the fact that it's magnetic resonance imaging. It works off of the magnetic properties of your tissues. And so you're actually exposed to little or no radiation. I actually prefer that over getting an x-ray, because x-rays expose you to a lot of radiation. And so the cool thing about MRIs as well is that it does help spot soft tissue and also changes in structure. So and I'm going to clarify that, if you've ever been to a practitioner and they were trying to diagnose you with some sort of herniated disc or disc issue via an x-ray, that is not the case, and that is not what the x-ray is used for. Moving forward, you know, let's talk about the discs themselves. Why is a herniated disc so common? Why do they get hurt? How do they get hurt? What is a disc itself? And throughout your research, trying to manage your sciatica pain, you probably come across, okay, your disc is like a jelly donut. So you want to imagine that the outside of the disc, we call it the annulus fibrosis, they're layers of connective tissue, very similar to, say, an onion. And inside that onion, you have a jelly-like substance, which is what we call the nucleus pulposus. Now, as we're younger, in our teenage years, 20s, and maybe even 30s, the consistency of that jelly inside the disc itself is actually more fluid-like. They kind of akin to it, say, something kind of like a rock crabby. It's a little bit more of like a gel-like substance. Interestingly enough, as we get a little bit older, the contents of that disc actually just dries out. It's just a normal process of aging. And so as we get a little bit older, the disc becomes drier. That also just slightly reduces the likelihood that a herniation could happen. And so I want you to imagine, well, what do these discs do? They actually are used to distribute force and act as a fulcrum when it comes to movement. And so I want you to imagine what a fulcrum is, that you're looking at a seesaw, and the triangle that is the pivot point on the seesaw is the fulcrum itself. That's where you're actually having movement. And that's what the disc serves, is a fulcrum of motion and also force distribution, because it is, in fact, a soft structure that absorbs force. So the spine is in fact designed to move a little bit, but if you were to look, your spine, especially your low back, there isn't really too many structures that support the low back, which is why it's so important for us to engage our core to allow us to primarily move at the hips rather than the spine, which is one of the reasons why there's so many injuries located at both the neck, because there's not much structure supporting the neck and not much structure supporting the low back itself. And if we're looking at the mechanism of injury for the lumbar discs, you're going to come in contact with a lot of conflicting information. You're going to see one school of physical therapists, doctors, and chiropractors who are saying you should never move your spine. Your spine needs to be rigid. That belongs to more of the McGill, Big Three, a lot of the original discoverers of low back pain rehab and sciatica pain rehab. They were saying you were to never move your spine because if you move your spine, you're going to herniate a disc and that's going to cause a cascade of pain. And you probably encountered doctors like this throughout your recovery journey up until about now. The other end of the spectrum, you're looking at the newer age therapists, chiropractors, and other movement specialists when they're saying your spine is designed to move. So what they're doing is they're actually having you try to move throughout the full range of motion, getting your back to move as much as possible, saying that your back is stiffer because you're trying to restrict motion. I myself fall in between those two spectrums. I think that there is a level of motion that is allowed in the low back, but we also have to take into account that the low back, it's only supported by the spine and the structures in the abdomen. And so when it comes to generating movement, it's not the most efficient way to generate movement because there's multiple joints. So the idea is that we want to be able to create a stiff spine, but also we want to create an environment where the spine can move when that is needed. And so when it comes to the mechanism of injury, a lot of people think, well, it's just normal wear and tear. You bend and arch your back a lot. And as a result, your back is going to blow out. You're going to end up herniating a disc. I think there's a more subtle way to that. The most important point is the idea of what I call shear force. And you can look at shear force in a couple of different ways. The primary movement that you'll often consider is what is called hinging. And so look at a door. If you were to open the door is in fact moving on its hinges. So the door itself is swinging open and swinging closed, but there's no extra motion that's happening. When it comes to shear force, I want you to think about taking your hands, making a fist, and putting your knuckles together. Shear force is going to be if you were to be rubbing your knuckles together. And what ends up happening is the following. When you rub your knuckles together, you generate a little bit of heat. But as you can tell, things move side to side versus hinging. And what's interesting is that when you look at a herniated disc, and it's layers and layers and layers of connective tissue, you can stretch it, you can bend it, all pretty strong. But then when you add the shear force and you move the vertebrae on top of each other sliding, that's where I am convinced that you can compromise the connective tissues, leading to herniations and the other sequelae of disc injuries. From there, we have shear force. The other area we're looking at is the concept of just repetitive motions, where if you're doing too much of one thing, it's going to cause an irritation, where in this case, when it comes to herniated disc, usually this either bulge backwards or back to the side. They call it posterior or posterior lateral. And so that's something along the lines if you're bending forward a lot, if you're bending forward early in the morning. And from there, we're looking at just overall posture. So if you're sitting and you're body slumped forward and your back is super rounded, over time, the contents of that disc can push backwards because you're just putting a lot of pressure backwards on the disc.
The new Wegovy pill is now available through Weight Watchers. Powerful GLP-1 results in a simple pill at the lowest price available. And with Weight Watchers, you can get doctor support and personalized nutrition programs. See if you qualify at weightwatchers.com. Ad not reviewed or approved by Novo Nordisk.
The layers to start to weaken, and the combination of the shear force. And so there's a lot, those are the main mechanisms. So we have shear force, we have repetitive motion, and then we have prolonged motion as well. But the key thing is that we have to understand that when it comes to pain management, not only are we looking at, say, the radiological findings, what you find via an MRI or an X-ray or CT, we also have to focus on what is the clinical presentation of your symptoms. And the clinical presentation of your symptoms isn't just where is your pain located, but it's also how does your pain behave? Because when it comes to, say, disc issues, you're looking at trying to reduce the bulge of the disc because the bulge itself was theorized to actually put pressure on the nerve, and that is why you're having pain or weakness. And so, say for example, if you are having a disc bulge backwards or posteriorly, you're looking at trying to push that bulge back in towards the middle of the disc. And so, if you look, if the bulge is pushing backwards, theoretically speaking, it would make the most sense to do more of a backwards bend or like the McKenzie press up, which would actually theoretically push the disc back in towards the middle, hence reducing the irritation on the nerve. That's, again, would be focused on the idea that the disc bulge is actually causing the pain, is the fact that extension could be helpful. Another component of possibly reducing the disc herniation is side bending towards the side of pain or towards the side of the herniation. The key is to be able to focus on reducing that bulge, so you're always leaning backwards or you're leaning towards the side of pain to help reduce that. This episode is brought to you by the Patient Advocate Program. Are you tired of not having support between your rehab sessions? Introducing the Patient Advocate Program, and we're focused on your recovery and we're offering you 24/7 access to a doctorate of physical therapy. Stop waiting in line to be seen and stop spending hours doing long exercise programs. Imagine being able to get all of your care delivered straight to your phone. Best of all, it's affordable. We believe everyone deserves top-notch relief without breaking the bank. So why wait? Take control of your health today and visit PTPatientAdvocate.com and book your free call with our experts. Now, on the other hand, you might be dealing with more of an arthritic issue. If we're dealing with an arthritic issue, there can be an overgrowth of bone, which often happens with spinal arthritis. And what ends up happening is that the pathways of which the nerves are exiting the spine become narrow because the bone is growing more and as a result, there's more of an opportunity to pinch that nerve. So our jobs, and when it comes to trying to manage something, say like an arthritic issue, is to open up that portion of the spine, whether it be forward bending or leaning away from the side of pain. Really, the goal is opening up the pathways to allow the nerves to run freely so they're not getting pinched. But again, it's going to be really focused on actually the clinical presentation, because a lot of people I've seen, they may have two or three bulging discs and they're posterior laterally. And theoretically speaking, if their disc bulge is backwards and to the right, if we lean to the right and do a backwards bend, their pain should be reducing if we're treating the disc itself. However, a lot of patients that I've seen, they actually get worse with that type of intervention, and they actually get better with a forward bend and a bending away from the side of symptoms. So that tells us, okay, maybe they do have a herniated disc, but the cause of the pain that they're dealing with might be more of an arthritic issue, and we needed to open up the areas of the nerves to allow them to flow freely. And this is where I'm talking about the concept of the importance of clinical presentation or how your symptoms behave. And it's important to be able to take this information from an MRI, but then also combine it with how your symptoms behave, and we can get a better idea, and it allows us to treat you as the person as compared to trying to just treat your MRI. And so the big question of today's episode is to ask, will my herniated disc actually heal? And the big answer is yes, most likely. And it's going to be under some specific conditions. Number one, we need to focus on minimizing the irritating stimulus. So say, for example, if you know that you have a herniated disc and it's painful and it hurts every single time you bend forward to touch your toes, the simple thing that you can do is actually stop bending forward to touch your toes. But then that also tells us, oh, well, maybe backwards bending could be helpful. So it tells us that we need to migrate towards those activities that make us feel better, but then also avoid, but really more so modify the activities that actually make us worse. Because the reality is the fact that you're going to have to bend over to pick up your child. You're going to have to bend over to put on your shoes. There's got to be a way that you should be able to do it pain-free. And it's important for you and your provider or your physical therapist or chiropractor to help come up with strategies to allow you to do these activities without causing pain. The second component is actually developing core stability. And core stability actually allows you to focus on keeping a stable spine or a consistent spine shape as you're moving along the axis of your hips. So what that means is when you're bending forward, when you're leaning side to side, all the motion should be happening at your hips, minimizing any sort of extra motion that's happening at your back, especially if your back doesn't like to be moving at this point. So we're looking at trying to stabilize. And it's, yes, it's kind of like planks and maybe like the crunch up or the side planks, but it's also just ensuring that you're using your abs and your core to be able to move around, allowing you to move about at your hips. And then the third piece is actually going to be focusing on the healing factors that are going to be really necessary to allow the herniated disc to get a little bit more reserved, or in some cases, development of scar tissue. And there's four main mechanisms as to how this works. And the article for the sources for this specific healing process is going to be found in today's show notes. And so number one is going to be macrophage infiltration. Macrophages are white blood cells. What they go in, what they do is they detect anything that's wrong and they go and they eat the garbage and they kind of dump it out. The second part is going to be inflammatory response. That's when we're looking at having a little bit more increased blood flow. There's going to be some swelling. There's probably going to be an increase in pain, but that's going to allow us to actually facilitate healing in a tissue that's injured, such as a herniated disc. The third component is matrix remodeling. So we're looking at the development and building of collagen protein that actually allows us to help restore the integrity of that disc itself. And then the fourth part is what we call neurovascularization. So what that means is that you're having both nerves and blood vessels grow and regenerate, allowing that disc to become a little bit more resilient. And so again, it's important for us to understand that yes, things can heal, but we also need to ensure that we have to prevent the specific activity that hurt in the first place. And if it's a repetitive activity, it's important for us to modify either the dosage of that activity or how we're doing it, but then also ensuring that we are providing the necessary movements that will facilitate healing and feeling better. And so some of the key exercises that you might have come across that can be helpful for a herniated disc would be something that would be more extension-based. So back bends, cobra press ups. Another thing that you can look at is actually leaning towards the side of the herniation as well. And then also you can either rotate towards or away. I see equal benefits, but it's really dependent on how you're feeling. And so again, if you have a herniated disc, don't lose hope. Most of these injuries actually do well without the use of surgery. And there are many ways for us to be able to heal and recover from pain. There are many ways to heal. There's many ways to get rid of your pain. Focus on the things that make you feel better. Avoid or change the things that make you feel worse. And you can break free of the pain and feel happy and get on with your life. Thank you so much for tuning in. We hope you got some help from today's podcast. And for more info, check us out at ifixyoursciatica.com. Have a fantastic and pain-free day. No patient-therapist relationship is formed by listening to this podcast. We are not providing medical advice, and all information should be confirmed by a medical provider.